Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and reimagining our current conversation. We're leaning on several Twin Cities leaders to help us reimagine our lives and the systems we're part of. In this episode, poet Michael Kleber Diggs lets us in on some of his reimaginings and inspires some of our own.
Reimagine walls to keep each other out. Reimagine ups and downs, made some down and outs.
What name for this? Do you hold salt or beads? Wood or wool? Someone else's hand or your own? Do you kneel? Lift one hand high above your head? Or do you shine the light of your palms up toward sky? Do you raise your chin? Close your eyes? Is light returned to you? Do you sit on a floor, shoeless? Chant? Do you fold your body gently onto itself, shins to earth, seat to feet, chest to knees? Are you among brothers or sisters? Are you alone sometimes? Do you call it morning light or dawn prayer? Is it the flower offering, or do you ask for daily bread? What do you say at dusk, at night? And what do you seek in supplication? What do you offer? Water or fruit, flowers or incense? Do you give your servant self? To what, may I ask? To what? I rest my sit bones on wood and wool. My feet touch carpet, pine, metal. I make circles and lines. Sometimes everything reduces to circles and lines. I call this providence. I know that's not the right word. I find this at home in my kitchen or at my desk. Sometimes this finds me when I'm on a bicycle surrounded by cars or trees, shoulders low and curved, back arched, my chest deflated and down, and me at work to keep everything round. Sometimes there I hear birds or squirrels chant above me. Other times I am summoned to spaces magnified in community. What name for this? I feel called. I walk forward to say, this is what I have to offer. One part of my small story. Or this is what I've witnessed. I want you to notice it too. My hands, my grasp. Sometimes they only claim air. Sweet siblings, we're here together either way. What name must we give to the this beyond our words?
So Greg Meyer, pastor of the Fabric, Michael Kleber Diggs, poet, new book, Worldly Things, just important stuff. And Michael and I have talked a lot, and we just have a million things that we could talk about, but this poem is important to me. And to me, there were two big switches. There was a whole page or so of do you, questions to us on how I do something, then you offered, this is what I do. But towards the end, you say this. I walk forward to say this. This is what I have to offer. One part of my small story. Or this is what I've witnessed. I want you to notice it too. That's why I asked you here today. And not because of this, but in fact, that just struck me now as being that. But this, your life has so much to open up for us in our lives. And I love how you disappear in your poetry and I appear. And it's, you know, I feel like my story is being told here. But I'm wanting to find this one part of your small story.
Yeah.
And how you've used poetry to do it. What part of your small story are you telling here?
In this poem?
Yeah, start there.
Yeah, I mean, so I think of What Name for This as an ecumenical poem in a lot of ways. I wrote it in response to the bombing of the Dar al-Farouk Mosque in Minneapolis. And by way of background, I was raised Catholic and worked hard to hold on to Catholicism and faith.
I think you told me like you only missed 2 weeks.
When I was growing up, we missed Mass twice. Once my mom was recovering from surgery, and the other, there was an epic snowstorm in Wichita, Kansas, and we couldn't go, so we prayed the rosary twice. And it was non-negotiable. That was one thing. So, but I had a hard time holding on to Catholicism and also to Christianity, but I also have never stopped kind of casting about, searching, wondering. The questions that make up, in effect, the first act of the poem are me just acknowledging all the different ways that people worship, all the different things that are connected to that. I brought forward elements from different faith traditions. I tried not to get too far into it, but some aspects of Christianity, of Muslim faith, a little bit of Hinduism, different things that I could just kind of think, and Judaism, as a way to kind of frame that there's something universal about our desire to connect to something that could serve as a guidestone or help us unravel a little bit the mystery of our existence here. And I'm no different. I do the same thing. And then in the second act, of course, I start talking about where I feel closest to the divine, which is in nature. And then finally to just say, in poetry also, one part of my small story, I knew that I was going to read this poem for the first time at a gathering that was a fundraiser to help the mosque. And as I was writing it, I wanted to have a conspicuous moment where I said that I'm not a Muslim. I'm not a person who has traditional religious faith. But this, when we gather together, this is a form of spiritual practice for me. I feel called forward to say this is one part of my small story. Or this is something I've noticed, I want you to notice it too, which is a framing for why I write. It's not the thing that took me to my desk. I really just loved poems and wanted to learn poetry. But as I wrote more, I started to understand that it was, in a way, a kind of spiritual practice for me too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to offer one part of my small story. So reading this book and living with this book a little bit, one of the things that I really feel is that you've used these poems to figure out who you are and what might be useful for other people to hear.
Yeah.
Does that sound fair?
I think that's fair. I started to see the book as having three conversations. One is, this is who I'm from, about my family and about my upbringing. And I lost my father in tragic circumstances when my twin brother and I were 8. And so that's an element of it too. I also was finding myself writing a lot about where I live. And what I mean by that is America in this particular moment, a racialized country, a country that's still kind of grappling with its history and with truth and progress and all of those things. And then the third thing is, this is where I'd like to live. Aspirational poems that are kind of pointed at imagining a world where we're more comfortable in community with each other, where it's easier for us to see each other's humanity and to connect to each other in that way. And in that moment, that part where I'm talking about witnessing, I want to be candid and I want to speak with clarity about what I see in America right now for people who look like me. I don't want to shy away from that. I don't want to... I want to find a way to speak about it with candor and clarity in a way that allows my feelings to be known. Poetry is a great place to share difficult truth. The framing allows it to come across with, I think, often a kind of grace that makes it easier to spend time with and hear. I didn't come to it with that purpose, but along the way I saw the potential in poetry, in all of art, quite frankly, to allow us to consider difficult things in ways that are profound and lasting and, I hope, transformational.
Would you read one of each of those categories for us?
Yeah.
Those three movements?
Sure.
Movements?
Sure.
The first being, like, who I am from, my people, my...
Yeah. So this is a poem that gives you a sense of that. It's called Ode to My Mother's Face. Crowned by carob and silver down, lovely across her Oklahoma earthen glow, my mother's face is an ovate frame with apostrophe eyebrows framing the massive planets of her eyes. I love her countenance captured in a photo from 50 years ago, before her lover was killed and not replaced, before the joys and blood of motherhood, a powdery base against her sharp white uniform, a tidy nurse's cap resting comfortably on her nest of ideas, her graduate's smile, her tirelessness, but not like I love her face at 80. Her ears unchanged in size, the knot she owns above her heavy glasses, sad growths crowding her eyes, deep folds arching away from her widening nose, around her skeptical mouth, like parentheses staging the lush curtains of her lips, the ones letting you have just enough show to realize you're missing something. My mother is the lone freckle on her right cheek, put in place by providence, a period wanting the next sentence. So that's family. And then this is an example of a poem where I'm thinking about this place and now. Grinding down to prayer for George Floyd. I woke to the news you were dead. The what arrived before daylight, the how was an agony unfolding as I dreaded my way to dusk. Unfolding against my want not to know, but I already knew. Have known since I could know. Officers, arrest, black, man, 20, video, knee, sir, back, dollar, 8, counterfeit, hands, sorry, 46, mama, please, breathe, please. Were you tired, George? I feel tired sometimes. America on my neck, my lungs compressed so much they can't expand, contract, take in, send out oxygen, words. My dentist says I grind my teeth. My molars are wearing smooth, The next night, I jolted awake to find my fists clenched tight, some fight, my heart pounding fast, my mouth hanging open, slack, not tight that time. Just me, on my own, gasping for air 6 times a minute, a raspy sound. The world was darkness. My room was darkness. I lay in a state of in-between and thought of you, but also God. I wanted the sun, but did not ask. I hoped instead for a quiet dawn and peace for us. Real peace for us. I hoped so hard, it almost made a prayer. And then all for the aspirational poem, I'll read The Grove. I was, as I was arriving this morning and sitting among you and reading about fabric and hearing and seeing the word community echoed again and again, Greg and I spoke at one point about fabric as an idea and all the things that that word allows us to consider. Poets and writers think in metaphors, and fabric is a perfect metaphor for weaving things together, taking things that on their own are beautiful but maybe not terribly strong, and bringing them into community or connection, or weaving them with other things so that they are stronger. And it made me think about this poem, this aspirational piece called The Grove. Planted here as we are, see how we want to bow and sway with the motion of earth and sky. Feel how desire vibrates within us as our branches fan out, promise entanglements, rarely touch. Hear our sweet rustlings. If only we could know how twisted up our roots are, we might make vast shelter together. Cooler places, verdant spaces, more sustaining air. But we are strange trees, reluctant in this forest. We oak and ash, we pine, the same, not different. All of us reach toward star and cloud. All of us want our share of light, just enough rainfall.
So we're taking 4 weeks here, doing something I hope we do all the time, but just really naming it and focusing on it, and we're calling it reimagining. You're reimagining so many different things, and I feel like you're, as I maybe alluded to earlier, is that your poetry seems to be a way for you to dig into something deeply enough to begin to reimagine, and then, like you said in that opening poem, then to offer it to someone else, to share it with someone else as well, for them to reimagine. In this poem, you're reimagining with this landscape of people who want to know and be in relationship to the divine is. You know, and here, as a community, I mean, this is one of our big things we wrestle with. I mean, some people are very comfortable with some traditional ways of understanding it. Some people have a total knee-jerk reaction against it. People are following different metaphors that are more of the most meaningful to us. And so we are all these trees growing here. And at times we realize we're part of the same grove, and at times we feel like, how come you have needles? I've got leaves, you know?
Right.
What is all of your reimagining? What's that all about? You got the answer to that, right?
No, I think I think I'll just keep wrestling with it. Okay. That last poem, The Grove, to me, is simultaneously aspirational and not. I mean, we're part of the same ecosystem.
Yeah, right.
We choose to ignore that. The same forces that impact the roots of one tree in the forest impact the roots of all the trees in the forest. The same sunlight helps, the same rain. When there's a fire, it affects everybody. And we, in a way, I think, have been trained to deny that. And there's a real moment right now of individualism, and I think it's also fair to call it selfishness, to see ourselves and center ourselves and in the work there. I always like to think I'm no different. I always hope that in the work I'm doing, I'm interrogating my own shortcomings more than and before I consider anybody else's. That some portion of what we struggle with because we're human beings and we're prone to error and easily manipulated and driven and captivated by fear sometimes more than love and things like that. So I'm hopeful. I want to spend as much time thinking about and writing about what's possible as I do what's broken. I also want to write about things that I see that are cool and beautiful as part of that too. And I think all of it together allows us to make some kind of type of understanding. But divinity, as I understand it, is accessible to us when we come together. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, I think it becomes much more apparent when we start trying to participate with it together. One of the, we too are trying to be open and realizing that what we know now, how we hold community, how we hold the divine, how we hold that which is greater than ourselves, is where we need to be, probably both individually and as a community right now.
Right.
And the purpose of it is to help us figure out what we need to do next.
Right.
Not to have it. So, you know, one of the pieces that we feel is really important, and I think this relates back to your poetry, is, you know, is questions rather than answers. We're highly skeptical of answers, are looking for better questions, like, mm-hmm. you know, what conversation does a question offer? For me, as a person who stands up and talks a lot, not very long or anything, right? Why are you laughing?
Right.
But to me, it's like, how can I feel like I have a relationship with the people I'm speaking to that I don't need to use coercion to get them to conform to what I'm thinking, but rather how can I have enough conviction in what I'm speaking about that it's compelling enough that they're going to engage in the conversation,
right?
And that we will. And with your poetry, it feels like, wow, you just have this fantastic way of being compelling and not coercive.
At a certain point, I really resist the temptation to try to come off as wise or as a person who's figured anything out. I want to be a wanderer and a searcher, and I want to ask questions. And I want to ask questions about myself, and I want to ask questions about the world, and I want to share what I'm thinking about, but not ever with any kind of certainty. The only time I feel comfortable accessing anything that feels like truth to me is when I'm talking about how I feel. That I can do. Mm-hmm. I can say, this is how I felt about that thing. And no one can debate that point, because that's authentic. And authenticity is something that's really important to me in my writing. But I try to avoid certainty. I try to avoid solutions or answers. I try to ask. I try to share from my experience. And I try to share how I felt about what was going on. And I know now for sure that in that sharing, I'm hoping that the people I'm in conversation with in the writing Well, hear me. This is something I've noticed. I want you to witness. I want you to notice it too. That's what you do with it. I want to point at it. I want to say how I felt about it. And that's kind of it. A couple weeks ago, I was in Winona talking to a classroom in of college students. And in the back corner, there was a man, a white man who was, I'm going to guess, in his 40s. And he had on a black hat with a black American flag on it. And he had on a mask with a black American flag on it. And I thought, I don't know how he's going to feel about this poem I'm about to read called America is Loving Me to Death. But I'm going to read it anyway. And he came up to me after that class visit and he said he really liked the poem. And he told me he was a school teacher. And he asked where he could find the book that he wanted to share with his students. And I said, here, have my copy of it. So I read it wrong. I felt comfortable reading that poem, and I would feel comfortable reading it anywhere because I'm talking about two things. This is what I've seen, this is what I've observed, and this is how I feel. And that's kind of it. In every other respect, I'm trying to avoid a conclusion except to say that this is how these conditions and these realities affect me. That's it. Yeah.
I think that would be an interesting poem to read. But can you help us maybe try to mess with words and stuff a little bit? You've all got paper, and if you didn't take your own Sunday paper and you went to grab one so you have a place to write and have a pen, can you give us a couple of prompts and maybe walk us through some real simple steps that so we could just get a taste for how you have been using words to reimagine your world.
Yeah. Okay. No, I love that idea. So we'll do like a mini writing exercise just as a starting point. And as you're writing, I want to share one pro tip from the writing world.
Ooh.
Writers often think of an audience. Who's the audience for my work? Or who's the audience for this poem or this collection of poems or this novel or whatever else? For purposes of this writing exercise, I want you to imagine that the only audience for what you're writing is you. And the reason I want you to do that is because if you imagine you are the only audience, you get away from any concern about the quality of what you're writing or what the writing is gonna accomplish. And early on when you're writing, you don't wanna be connected to either one of those things because they'll affect what you're doing. It's not about the quality of the expression, it's not about preparing something that will be published or highly regarded by others. It's just about connecting to how you feel. So separate yourself as far as you can from any tendency to think, I'm gonna read this or share this, and just use it as a place to express. At the outset, I'll ask you to just answer one question. What's an issue that's stirring in you? Something that you care about deeply, something that you'd like to see changed in your home, in your community, in the world. Just think of one issue. And this is just a starting point. A frame that you can use to have any number of conversations, but start by picking one thing that's stirring in you. I'll give you a moment to kind of write that down. The second question is, why is this issue important to you? Out of all the things that you could have selected, why did you pick this one? It's not to say that no other issues matter, but connect yourself to what it is about that issue that motivates you to consider it or to write about it. Okay, here comes the really hard one. Now I want you to imagine the world if that issue is resolved. Now, you may find yourself tempted to say, that will never happen. We will never end homelessness. We will never end poverty. We will never do this. We will never do that. Don't do that. For purposes of this exercise, imagine the future is limitless. Allow yourself to dream. If, in order to achieve that outcome and to imagine the world with your issue resolved, you have to enter into science fiction, enter into science fiction. Whatever you have to do to separate yourself from attention to all the realities or challenges that would prevent you from achieving that desired outcome, do it. But imagine the world if your issue was resolved. What would that world be like? Okay. And last question, just to kind of begin to think about it. What would it take to get to your desired outcome? Just feel free to frame that in general ways. Try again not to spend too much time on all the things that would be in your way, but just think about what it would take to get to that desired place. Yeah. So this is just the beginning, just some scaffolding and rough sketches, and I hope that it will lead to something later. In fact, I expect that. I'll go house to house to check. Yeah. To collect your completed vision work, but just a possibility, just kind of imagining a world. I want to argue that sometimes progress is frustrated because we stop before we get started. We see all the reasons why the thing that we want to see changed will not change. It's too late. The opposition is too emboldened, too organized, too well-financed, any number of other things. And that affects how we go forward. One portion, I think, of the artist's job is to dream anyway, and to imagine, and to build new worlds, and to be relentless in devotion to possibilities. There are many different ways that arts are practiced. I just want to say that last summer, when so many things were happening in the city related to the pandemic, in response to the killing of George Floyd, as the election was gathering toward voting day, I found myself just thinking, what's my job in this? And kind of settling on that it's to continue to imagine different and better, and to fight like crazy against cynicism and doubt and practicalities and all the things that would prevent me from dreaming, and to share my dreams. That's one part of what I could do, and that others would be doing other things, writing policy, agitating in the street for change, building supply chains and temporary housing and temporary hospitals, and that all of our work together would lead us to where we wanted to be. But my job, or one thing that I could do, was just continue to be a dreamer and to imagine possibilities. And I hope that you'll make time in your lives for whatever it is you care about to do the same thing.
Yeah, thank you. Not gonna let you go just quite yet. So this is your homework. Develop this however you can. Spend some time this week. I mean, I think this is worth it. You've got a little bit of momentum here at least. And as you come up with whatever it is, and maybe you're gonna capture this in a poem or just more notes, or maybe you a photograph or a drawing or something, find a way to share that on some sort of social media and use the hashtag reimagining my life, right? Write that down on your paper. And you don't have to, you can just say, I did it. Hashtag reimagining my life. Or you can share something from it if you want. It doesn't matter. And I know sometimes we're horrible about actually doing that, but that's a challenge. Like, how many of us can do that? And that's create community around people that are reimagining our lives, which is the world together. Does that sound like? I'll give it a shot.
I will too. I'll do the same thing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We're running short on time. What's the last poem you'd?
So, read America's Loving Me to Death separately. I want to read a different
poem. It's not
poem.
A closer.
it's
an opener.
It's an opener, not a like. Here, let me. You know, it's a tough poem. I want to read a slightly different poem. I'm going to tell you at the outset, most of my writing is pretty clear. Like, very few people leave my poems and say, I don't know what that was about.
And maybe sometimes, that's why I like it.
Sometimes poetry is fond of abstraction or intensely lyrical work that can be a little bit to grasp on a level of narrative. But I have one poem that's a little bit complicated, and I want to close with that because it allows me to talk about one other thing that I want to talk about. And this poem is called Worldly Things, which is also the title of my book. So I'll share that, and then one closing thought, or two, whatever. Worldly Things. Large clay pot, ancestral seeds, an old handmill to grind my yield. A little salt, my body bent to knead. This oven, two batteries, one bulb, ore and blasting heat, wires, casting molds. I've made a switch, a knife, one roll of tape, an empty oatmeal can, sandpaper, photo paper, the finest I can find, a patch of foil on which I'll press a sharp pin down to make a tiny hole. Darkness. Sufficient exposure to light. These things I bring to my writing desk workshop inside my kitchen, this room where I sweat, bake dense food, pattern light beams, snapshots, craft images, and other devices meant to survive me. And I'll tell you what I was thinking about with this poem. The original title was something like Bread, a Flashlight, Photos from a Pinhole Camera. That was the original title. And one of my very good friends, also an editor and poet, who gave me some edits, said change the title to Worldly Things. And I'm like, oh, that's such a good idea, because it ties to the title of the book, which actually came from a different poem, but I digress. I don't do this often, but one day I wanted to write about what I hope my writing will do. If I could choose what outcome I would have for my work, what would it be? And I came up with, I hope my work will be nourishing. I hope it will be a light in the darkness. I hope it will illuminate things we don't often see or always see. And I hope that I will write things that will last. I want to embrace the fact that the images I create, getting that back to the pinhole camera, may not be as sharp or pristine or as digitized or as perfect. I want them to be scruffy, but I want them to come from me, from a thing that I made. And I hope that those ideas will last. I think at the time I was actually just thinking on a level of midlife crisis. I'm in my 50s, I can't afford a Corvette. So what do I want instead? How about a poetry book and like this way to rage against how limited our time is here, something that will keep going after I'm gone. And I wanted my work to be that too. In a way, an evidence of my time here, but also an expression of what I cared about and what I saw, which is just my way of saying that in your creative pursuits too, in your life, in your work, I think that there's value in understanding what motivates you to do what you do and to thinking about what outcomes you'd like to have for your time here. A little philosophical, but to me, I think having a general sense of where I'd like to go and what I'd like my work to do has been helpful. So I hope you'll do that too. Yeah.
I think you gave us sustenance, you gave us light, and you gave us something that will last.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Reimagine and see if there was just you and me.
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can connect with others through our social media accounts at FabricMPLS or find resources for discussion with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website, fabricmpls.com.